I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi in red. Talking the rapids and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. My name is Matt Pollard. We are coming to you on Sunday, November 3rd, 2024. The 2024 Rapids season is over as the Burgundy Boys lost 4-1 on Friday to the Los Angeles Galaxy in leg two of their best of three series. But hey, RSL and Columbus Crew are out of the playoffs as well. And Brad Guzan had a howler trying to play out of the back. So Zach Steffen is in good company. Oh, and Northern Colorado Hailstorm lost their first round playoff game at home, but Colorado Springs Switchbacks are through to the second round of the USL Championship playoffs. Joining me now to talk about this season that was and provide some respite from the never-ending political election doom scrolling, Rabbi Mark Goodman.
Matt's voice is not a emotional trigger for Colorado Rapids fans. He did not shout himself hoarse at the match last night or Friday night. Rather, I think he's nursing some sort of a little bug. So get well soon, Matt, and hopefully it is not your soul and your spirit that have been crushed by the Colorado Rapids that is being expressed by your voice tonight, but rather just a pretty standard nasal bug.
There's a little bit of allergies going on, Mark, as we're getting the proper, all of the leaves are officially falling. So I would argue, at least in the front range of Colorado, it is still fall, but it is mostly fall on the ground. I did go to A Basin this morning, Mark, and I did like four or five runs, and I am not ready for leg day and ski season at this time, unfortunately. So, but yes, Mark, it's obvious to you, Rabbi listeners. Hopefully it is now obvious to you. We've been playing hurt just like Georgi Mihailovic has the last couple weeks. But it's the end of the season now. My voice, my nose are going to get a rest, and we get to do something other than play or other than watch soccer in the next couple weeks that we have. Mark, are you, I should say again, listeners, we're recording this on Sunday night. I have some other stuff going on Sunday or Monday, so there's a possibility we are not publishing this until Tuesday, November 5th, so Election Day. So remember the 5th of November. Mark, are you once again contributing to the democratic process in these United States of America?
Obviously, I am. Me and my wife already voted. We submitted our early ballots. We're good to go. I am not volunteering anywhere else. Tuesday is excitement for me. That will help me not think about the election. And I think that, by the way, that is really hard. I spent a lot of time this weekend leading services at my synagogue in Erie, trying to pick topics that would not make people think about the election and just give them like 10 minutes to think about something else. And I think I succeeded at that. But like, I'm just like going back to the New York Times to read their latest article on the polls and like, you know, worrying about things and so on. Because I think there's a lot to worry about. Tuesday evening, though, the local high school boys team is in the state playoffs, and they play their first round game across the river at the public school community stadium. Because Pittsburgh's high schools don't have soccer fields, or football fields. They like share one field for like the there are like nine high schools in the city, and they basically share like two fields. So I'll be doing that. So I'll go to their playoff game, which is a great way to mentally avoid thinking about the election. And hopefully it'll be a lot of fun. So it's a district playoff game between them and some school from the middle of the state. And if they win, they get to go to Mechanicsburg. All the Pennsylvania state championship games take place. I think the quarters, the semis, and the finals all take place. Maybe it's just the semis and the finals take place in Mechanicsburg, home of Bobby Warshaw.
Bobby Warshaw,
former MLS commentator and I would say friend of the pod, but he's probably never listened to our podcast. but a really great soccer voice who's just not around anymore, who we miss. So, and a good MLS player, a solid, you know, like a career dude for I believe Dallas, FC Dallas and Dallas Burn before them. So
yeah, and then he was at, I saw him, Mark, when I was, this would have been, listeners, prior to Holding the Highline coming to existence. Mark, you remember me missing like 3 or 4 home games in June and July in the summer of 2016. This was in my traveling young first job out of school, oil and gas pipeline days. And I had a project that would have been out in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, home of the Little League World Series.
Sure.
And so we were working, 5.5 days a week. It was usually a half day Saturday, and then we had days off on Sunday, and that was an absolute grind. But, you know, we would get done at, you know, 1-2 o'clock at the latest on the Saturday. And then so there were two games that I went to, Mark. I went to a Bethlehem Steel game, which was like 3.5 hours away. And then I did go to a Harrisburg City Islanders match that would have had Bobby Warshaw there. And I do not remember the name of the stadium, Mark. This was a minor league ballpark in, not Williamsport, in Harrisburg or Harrisburg City. And wow, it had like these fake dinosaur statue things in the outfield that you couldn't access, or it wasn't like a playground or anything. So I remember that being weird. And I remember there being almost no one in the crowd. And I bought a scarf and I was hanging out. And then they just said that like fans can come on the field for autographs or whatever. So I have, Mark, on my scarf wall in my bedroom, a Harrisburg City Islander scarf that is signed by like the entire team from that. Somewhere in, wow, there is Bobby Warshaw's signature. And he and I did take a selfie after the game as well. But to your point, Mark, we like to think that Holding the Highline is a good resource for Rapids fans, for you to better understand, to commiserate when the team loses, a platform for you to enjoy and reminisce on positive wins as well, but that also know that soccer and sport is available to people looking for a bit of an escape from life, or that are just looking for something as a distraction, particularly when times are down or when things are difficult. Sport can be a resource for energy and joy and a sense of community when those things can be hard to find, or when those things can be a little bit troubling. So, Mark, if you'll indulge me, I did want to take a minute or two to talk about the fact that we're recording on Sunday. Listeners, you're probably listening to us on Tuesday or Wednesday of this upcoming week. And there's going to be a presidential election that, with the polls closing by the time you probably listen to this, or at least on the day of that you listen to this. And in that regard, Mark and I are coming to you from the past, and we are coming to you from a place of uncertainty about what is going to happen and what the ultimate outcome will be. I realize there is a possibility, listeners, that you could be listening to us on Friday or Saturday. That would be what, Mark? November 8th or November 9th, potentially.
Eight? Nice.
And we maybe still don't have a result. And even if we do have something in terms of what the what AP and other major outlets will say that they've predicted or said what the result is going to be, or that certain states have certified their election, two major candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, have reacted to that, that there will still probably be some uncertainty as far as the transition period from the Biden administration to whatever is coming next. So I think, listeners, we want to acknowledge that. We want to acknowledge that uncertainty, and that you have a right to feel uncertain or scared or unclear about where you're going. You have a right to not feel well about the state of where we are in our political discourse in this country. That is a perfectly natural, that is a perfectly human reaction to have. Hopefully us talking about the Rapids, albeit talking about a 4-1 loss to the LA Galaxy in the season ending, can be a little bit of break from the doom scrolling for you. And if Mark and I had, we've said the last couple episodes now to go vote. So if somehow, listeners, you're listening to us on before polls close in your precinct, district, state on Tuesday, and you still have the opportunity to vote and have not taken it, do so and take your time to do so in an educated way. If you're listening to us after polls close and you haven't dealt with that, don't vote. That would be illegal. We don't want that to happen here at Holding the Highline. And it's okay to feel sad or scared about all of this. And the best way that I think we can move forward, regardless of the results that come in the coming days, I think is for us to have some form of empathy, some form of coming together, or at least there's a way, Mark, given what our politics has become in this country, where so much of it, I think, is about bragging rights about your side winning if you align with one of the two major parties. And that leads to people being sore winners and sore losers. And I hope, Mark, that we're able to have some form of a transition that I think acknowledges that and is able for, you know, the country to move forward. I think that is a possibility, given the two candidates who are available to us. And we'll see what happens. I still believe this is the greatest country in the world, and I still believe that we are capable of doing great things. And I think we have more in common than we have apart right now. We'll see whether or not our political discourse and the results and what that comes from with Congress and the Senate and with the White House is able to move forward on that in 2025. Mark, anything you want to say about this, or shall we actually talk about soccer instead of the possible ending of American democracy, as this is the series finale of America this week?
It's going to be okay. I mean, I think, you know, I think it is the only way to not catastrophize this, for if you're listening to this after the election, or which probably is not possible since people will be challenging this all the way through the Friday that you suggested, Matt. People might still be listening to this podcast, but we have stress tested American democracy multiple times in the last 4-8 years. We can do it again. I don't want to. I'd rather just move forward and go back to the boring years of politics that Matt and I grew up on. You know, if you remembered the George Bush Sr.'s presidency, he was really dull. If you remember Bill Clinton's first when he his reelection challenger was Bob Dole, that was really dull. You know, Barack Obama was challenged by Mitt Romney, that was really dull. Like, dull elections are kind of great. I think my hope is that we go back to dull times for America, but we've also had, you know, like, very, you know, trying times, and our republic has withstood it, and our checks and balances system, and our balanced executive, legislative, judicial system more or less holds up. So I think there are a lot of people out there basically saying, like, this is the end of America, it's the downfall of the Roman Republic, and da da da. And I'm still an optimist, even if things don't work out the way some people hope they do. I think we'll be okay.
These things, too, shall come to pass. And somewhere in the metaphorical, there's a joke that me and my family make, Mark. I was really into a number of the books that you standard have to read in high school. And one of them was To Kill a Mockingbird. And there's one of the chapters, Mark, after something horrible happens. A lot of bad stuff happens in To Kill a Mockingbird. I can't remember when this would have been. But there's a chapter in the book, Mark, that ends with Atticus was reading the paper, implying that regardless of the bad things that happen, like, life goes on and other people move on and do the things that they've naturally done. And one of the many things that was habitual for Atticus Finch was reading the paper. So these things too shall come to pass. Atticus Finch will read the paper. I will go skiing, and Mark will walk his dog. Onward.
And I might go skiing too this year. It'll be fun.
Mark, we actually want to talk about this.
Well, we have to talk about something also disappointing, but maybe not as disappointing as the election result. So it was a bad day all around on Saturday, if you
Friday.
Count. Well, technically, for my time zone, the result on Foot Mob was recorded on Saturday because it was late enough. But, like, all four of my teams lost on Saturday. That's Arsenal lost to Newcastle. That's the Pittsburgh Riverhounds lost to Charleston. Hapoel Jerusalem lost to, I don't even remember what team. And the Colorado Rapids lost to the LA Galaxy to knock them out of the playoffs. I'm sorry if I stole your thunder there, Matt, but you'll do the full recap for us anyways, as you always do, and with an exceptional caliber and quality.
Listeners, this past Friday, November 1st, don't talk to me about Tuesday, November 2nd, the Colorado Rapids were defeated in their home playoff game by the LA Galaxy by a final score of 4-1. This was the second match in a best of three with the LA Galaxy, and the Rapids had lost the first leg by a score of 5-0. So this was a must win. Colorado needed to force penalties and win penalties or win outright in the 90 minutes. And they did not do that. Mark, I'll touch briefly on the lineup changes because this was probably the most jumbled, you know, like going into FIFA or going into Football Manager and saying, you know, auto-generate something different from a roster and a lineup standpoint. It was on paper mostly a 3-4-3. That is how Chris Normus described it. So a deviation from what has normally been the Rapids go to 4-2-3-1. This would have been a back three of mostly Reggie Cannon, Andreas Maxu, and Lalas Abubakar from right to left. The wing backs were up in midfield and Keegan Rosenberry on the right, Sam Vines on the left. The same double pivot, if you will, of the two gingers, Ollie LaRoz and Connor Ronan. And then, well, I guess other than it being a 3-4-3 mark, it could also have been a 3-4-2-1. The two would have been Kevin Cabral and Georgi Mihailovic in the central winger positions, if you will. And then Rafael Navajo up top. And this would have evolved also, Mark. There were times in which the wing backs, Rosenberry and Vines, also dropped back into a back five. And if there was a period in which someone dropped back to make it the more familiar 4-2-3-1-ish, it would have been Keegan Rosenberry who was going back rather than Sam Vines in that position. And for the most part, Mark, I would say this was probably, this is the most tactically interesting and I think tactically different game that the Rapids probably played all season, in that their principles of play were the same, but the way in which they approached it or the shape in which they approached that was different. And the kind of cat and mouse game between the who was doing what and the little, you know, tactical nuances were variable both between the Rapids and between the LA Galaxy, who had the three-man midfield that, Mark, almost looked like the like 2012 Seattle Sounders amoeba midfield with Brad Evans, if you remember that. And them going back and forth with who's marking Ollie LaRoz and trying to find and create space for Ricky Puig. And then obviously there was a tactical shift from the Galaxy when Gaston Brugman and Marco Royce come in to ultimately help seal the game. But in any case, listeners, it was two relatively fortuitous goals for the LA Galaxy in the first half. Gabriel Peck was pressing in the 8th minute on a clearing ball from Zach Steffen at the edge of the box and fortuitously goes off of him and then sneaks into the far bottom corner. Bit of a howler for Zach Steffen. Taylor Twellman had some not nice things to say about Zach, Mark, and I'm sure the USMNT haters who are just looking at the stats certainly feel vindicated by this. And yeah, it was a bad moment for Zachary. Ollie LaRoz responds with an absolute banger. Jeff Lorenowitz or Skel Shingashi like almost, Mark, in the 19th minute to make it 1-1 for the Rapids. And the two teams kind of go back and forth. Some good moments for Painsel, which eventually leads to him scoring in the 3rd minute of first half stoppage time off the post on a really nice shot that, you know, again, I'm not going to say lucky, but he picked out the corner. And if the ball goes an inch or two one way or the other, then either Zach gets a touch to it or it goes to the outside of the post and doesn't find a way to sneak in. Things slowed down for me in the second half, or at least got tighter in the second half. I thought Colorado very much was trying to stymie the LA Galaxy in transition, and Galaxy knew that they were playing with a lead, and they could very easily put numbers behind the ball, play compact, play from the counter, and that was going to serve them because they had a goal to the good in that regard. And so not that many chances for either team in the second half going into stoppage time. And then it was two breakaway chances, Mark, at which point it's garbage time. The Rapids have to throw caution to the wind and put numbers forward. And what happened in the first three matchups between these teams bore out in that from a tactics and a shape and a run of play standpoint. Ricky Puig scoring in the 1st minute of stoppage time and the 3rd minute of stoppage time to ultimately see out the game 4-1. Mark, I'll do Rabbi's choice on this. Do you want to start good thing, bad thing, or big thing?
Well, it's pretty rare to start with big thing, but I guess I'll start with big thing because I've never done it before. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe we never do it before.
First time for everything, Rapids fans.
First time. I know, like 5 years into this podcast, we're trying to break new ground, which is pretty weird. If you're still listening to this podcast, though, at this point in the season, God bless you. You know, I always love it when people are doing like, we know how the season ended and there's no games to preview. Why are we still listening? But the answer is, maybe folks want a little kind of like a dessert on the season, like a final capstone, like a good 36-year-old port or a 18-year-old single malt scotch to conclude the season. I'm drinking an oatmeal porter right now. I don't know about y'all. So the big thing was, and I think this was helpfully framed by friends over on Reddit, in the Rapids subgroup, when you look at the season, when you look back at the season, and we're going to do a full recap, and Matt came up with a brilliant way of slicing the season into 5 chunks, and it's really when you write the book, on the 2024 season, Matt. You know how to organize it into five sections, right? But this season was ultimately probably, depending on who you ask, or if you ask me anyways, a success that ended in failure, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Which is, we feel really good about what we accomplished. A lot of people came into the season, a lot of the pundits, and I have the receipts, a lot of the pundits in the MLS.com world, MLSsoccer.com world, put the Rapids somewhere between 10th and 14th in the Western Conference. I picked them 7th. They finished 7th. They had some great moments this year. They bought a few new players, or they brought back players from abroad who all clicked and did really well. They took a flyer 2 years ago on Kevin Cabral, and Cabral did some really good things this year that showed that he was still a contributor at the MLS level. They brought back Sam Vines and Cole Bassett, and both of them were able to reclaim some of the spark that they'd had when they had first joined the Rapids before they spent some time in Europe. And this game, you know, there was a certain amount of inevitability. At the end of the season, the slump moved the Rapids from 4th down to 7th, which meant that they were going to play some really difficult teams, and they were going to, and they lost home field advantage through the first rounds of the playoffs, and that was going to be a rough go for them. And so I think going back 2 or 3 games, you would have heard me on the podcast saying, well, it's been fun, kids, but like, let's start wrapping it up. And we did wrap it up, and that's okay. We were outclassed at the end by some very high-powered, high-octane teams, and that's okay. We will come back stronger next year. This was never going to be the year that the Colorado Rapids won MLS Cup unless some sort of miracles kind of all aligned. The pieces are in place for this team to take a step forward for next year. This is a very critical offseason where we kind of find out whether the front office is complacent and happy to be in the playoffs, comma, hashtag, we're just happy to be here, or whether they want to try and grab the brass ring, whether they really want to go for it or not. I actually, knowing this Moneyball style team that sits at the bottom 5 of MLS expenditures for front offices, that like, I'm okay. I'm sort of okay if they don't go out and blow a big wad on some fancy, fantastic players. I'd be bummed, and it's not what I want, but I'd understand it, or I would expect it. But right now, as it stands, the full review overview of the season is to say it was a good season that was a success, and in the end, we kind of came short, and none of that is unexpected, and that's okay. Over to you, Matt.
I want to finish that thought as well, Mark. You know, to your point, I was talking to somebody at the tailgate beforehand. I can't remember who, about, like, you know, in the macro or in hindsight, that the team not doing anything in the summer other than picking up the permanent transfer of Rafael Navajo to stay at the club, and then Reggie Cannon to come in as well. Like, to your point, Mark, that was another example in which the Rapids have done good work in the winter, and then for the most part held pat while everyone else stayed aggressive in the Western Conference. LA Galaxy bringing in Marco Royce, LAFC brought in Olivier Giroud, and I guess returned Carlos Vela, who's, I think, really just waiting for LAFC eventually to offer him a new contract opportunity. I don't remember Seattle doing anything all that much as well, Mark, and while in hindsight now it didn't necessarily help Real Salt Lake, it was good for them financially to cash in on Andres Gomez, and then they immediately reinvested that money. You juxtapose that with the Colorado Rapids, who still had, I don't know this for sure, but Mark, I think looking at the dead cap players who are still listed on the roster for the MLSPA for the spring roster salary releases from the MLSPA to then now, there were still some financial implications of Sidney Tavares, maybe Alex Gerschbach, and then definitely Danny Wilson and Sam Nicholson that I think hampered the team in the summer, that is now functionally money off of those books. You also compare that, Mark, with the fact that the Rapids spent between $3 and $4 million, possible record transfer fee on Georgi Mihailovic in the winter, then also did about the exact same with Rafael Navajo in the summer. Then a few weeks later, cash in 7 point whatever million plus a couple of other potential add-ons for selling Moise Bombito, biggest external transfer fee of a defender leaving Major League Soccer for Europe, and then didn't immediately go and respend that money. Is that money, Mark, that there will be Rapids fans who will wonder, was KSC from a financial standpoint then saying, okay, Bombito is paying for your two DP transfer fees, or this is money that is on the books for calendar year, MLS season, fiscal year 2025, rather than something that was immediately available to the club in order to spend? These are all good questions, but all this to say, listeners, that again, the Rapids did a really good job in the winter. That led to them having overall a good season. They were a little bit inactive in the summer transfer window relative to other MLS teams, and that certainly bore it out in affecting the fact that the Rapids didn't have a lot of viable depth and game changers on their roster, and a bunch of other teams are very, very good and have expensive players who should probably be playing in Europe. The LA Galaxy finished the game last night, Mark, or on Friday, I would argue, with three, possibly four players that could be playing for a Europa League squad right now. And I'm not sure, other than maybe Georgi Mihailovic and Cole Bassett, that the Colorado Rapids finished the season with more than two players who could say the same. And of course, in the case of the Rapids, Cole Bassett was out on the Friday, not available at all. And Georgi Mihailovic possibly playing on, what are we calling it, Mark, 1.5 legs, 1.5 working ankles. So not a fully healthy and fit Georgi Mihailovic, formerly of AZ Alkmaar. I'll just run through the game itself, Mark, for the sake of completionist, because we are sickos here at Holding the High Line, and there are some fans who will want to hear that. Mark, Ollie LaRoz scoring another goal. He now has 3 goals on the season for the Rapids. And Mark, those 3 goals are a game winner on 4th of July against St. Louis, really big deal. A goal in the third place game of Leagues Cup on a banger outside on a corner. And then another fantastic, very good skill goal that you would not see any other, that you would not see a lot of players in MLS being able to convert on, that ultimately got the Rapids back into the game when they were probably shell-shocked 8 minutes in off of a really bad play by Zach Steffen. I want to give some credit to Chris Armas here, Mark. You and I have been critical of some of his tactics or questioned what the game plan was going to be going into this fourth game of the year against LA Galaxy. The Rapids have their principles of play. The Galaxy are a bad matchup for them in terms of the G's strengths attacking-wise, play to the Rapids' defensive weaknesses, and the Rapids are potentially doing that with their system being unable to be executed properly due to the injuries of Bassett and Mihailovic. And Armas comes out and he changes something, and I'll pull up the quote, Mark, that I had that I used in my recap at Burgundy Wave of Armas saying, we've played the Galaxy 3 games. It was 11-3 overall. I think Armas is referring to the aggregate score for the first 3 games, so the 2 regular season and then the first playoff game. So it was 11-3 overall scoring wise. 3-4-3. We knew we could control transition more. It worked. I didn't want to sit here saying, well, we did the same thing in the last 3 games. It was my responsibility to find a solution. We fell short. It's an interesting formation for us moving forward. Mark, you and I recapped when Armas got hired the, you know, very infamous ending to his time, or very infamous ending of the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals, where they changed up something very significantly in the first leg against Atlanta United, completely, I won't say abandoned their principles, but had a very different look that was not Red Bull-Z at that time, and it didn't work out, and Red Bull, and that probably cost Red Bull an opportunity to host and win their first MLS Cup, and Red Bull supporters to this day have not forgiven Chris Armas for this. And Armas came in, Mark, in a can't win, or I won't say I can't win, but in a very difficult situation where if he abandons those principles and it ends up not working, and then Rapids fans could say, why wouldn't you do what got you here in the first place? And if he leaves it as is and the exact same thing happens, it was, okay, Chris, you know, you had 4 games against the LA Galaxy. You tried the exact same thing. So it was a bit of a damned if he did, damned if he didn't. And so he tried something that I thought was a nice, that was a nice happy medium of there, that was still them trying to play their game, tweaked slightly to make the opponent uncomfortable. And if they have Cole Bassett in the middle there next to Ollie LaRoz, Mark, and they have a fully healthy and fit Georgi Mihailovic, I think there's a possibility that does enough to limit the LA Galaxy and still have them try to create offensive stuff that would have worked for them. And look, yes, the final score will be 4-1. People will go back and look at the Wikipedia in, you know, in months and years times and see that it was a 5-1, a 5-0 at home for the Galaxy, and then a 4-1 on the road. And the aggregate score was 9-1. It was 2-1 in the in the 90th minute at the start before Ricky Pooch scores that first goal. Listeners, the Rapids were in this game, albeit I don't think they were carrying the play up to the 90th minute. And so the fact that many of the other games against LA Galaxy had not been competitive in that same way over the course of the 90 minutes, that's something we're celebrating, or that's something worth acknowledging that it was good and iteratively has the potential to be good going forward, as Armas alluded to. Mark, Zach Steffen, the first goal conceded, can't happen. I look forward to him not making that mistake ever again. Obviously, the end was not good. I cannot criticize or I cannot question the decision to throw caution to the wind, push the fullbacks forward, and effectively be only defending with two, maybe three defenders at the time, because at that point you need a goal. Otherwise, your season was over. So they risked it. No risk it, no biscuit. And they didn't get a biscuit, or I guess Ricky Pooch got two biscuits in stoppage time. So those were my bad things. Mark, did you see Cole Bassett's post on Twitter and other social media platforms about his injury?
I did not.
Let's pull that up really quickly, listeners. So, as you'll remember, listeners, Cole Bassett missed out. He would have played in the home match against Toronto FC, and then has missed the final six games of the regular season, listeners, which the Rapids lost all six of those games. And there's been a lot of discourse about the timing of the injury and the progression through that, with him being held out of training, and then he was back training normally, and then he appeared to be good going into decision day, and then there was reportedly a setback either on the Friday afternoon or the Saturday morning of decision day, this coming after Chris Armas described Bassett as being pain-free for about a week now and physically could not go in this playoff game as well. And so that's led to some Rapids fans obviously remembering how this club used to handle injury news and the way that it was communicated, and maybe being a little bit playing to their advantage in terms of what information and wording was used to describe certain injuries to certain players. And there's a lot of fans and some members of No One Good FC who've kind of questioned, was this actually a precautionary injury to begin with? Or did the club know that Cole Bassett was going to be out with that quad injury for a noticeable amount of time after the Toronto game? So Bassett, I don't know if this is in response to that, Mark, but he posts on social media, Rapids 96 fans gutted that the season has ended the way it did. Personally, it was devastating to have to watch from the sideline these last six games and not be able to impact the outcome of our season. What should have been only a 7 to 10 day injury turned into a month long absence. And for that, I am sorry. I did everything I could to get back in time for playoffs and was on track until a setback occurred the day before game one. I'm assuming is referring to the first leg of the playoffs. I will use this time to rest and come back stronger next year, as this adversity will hopefully trigger a new era for this club where we can compete closely for trophies every year. See you next year, CB. His initials. Mark, what do we make of this? How much are you reading into? You know, you and I covered Eignergate. We covered the extensive number of injuries that they've had in the past as well, all of the ACL injuries and the questioning around the timeline of this. I mean, Mark, as someone who went to training, I feel like a lot went into how Cole Bassett trained if he was completely unavailable in order to do. I do not believe that the media and the club are, I do not believe the club are trying to dupe the media with how Cole Bassett was used in training. I do not believe they're trying to dupe the fan base in here. I think Cole is being genuine this case, but Rabbi, your thoughts.
I'm not exactly sure what the question was. You do this thing, Matt, every once in a while where you bury the question 5 minutes ago and move on. But I never really got to kind of comment on the overall take of the game, so I'm just gonna like pivot and talk about that really quickly, which is like, I thought we were outclassed. I thought we weren't run off the pitch, because there were moments where they competed admirably. The moment where Ollie LaRoz hit the goal was after about 5 minutes of sustained push by the Rapids, and the 5 minutes after LaRoz where the two teams kind of played evenly. That was a good 10 minutes for the Rapids where they were doing pretty well. And that was basically from minute 9 to minute 29, give or take. Wait, did that make sense? No, it was like from minute 9 to minute 24, something like that, or minute 15 to 24. And then the rest of the game, the Galaxy ran over us roughshod, and I think that's it. How do I feel about Cole Bassett sitting out? How do I feel about Georgi Mihailovic coming on and playing through injury? I don't have really any strong opinions about the decision of players to kind of play through adversity and pain. I think it's admirable when they do it, especially if they know that there's a risk that it'll exacerbate an injury that'll take longer to heal. But, you know, a playoff game's a playoff game, and you got to, you know, tape it, ice it. When I was in high school, we used to have a trainer. And if you went into the trainer's room with any kind of injury, we used to joke all the time, me and my friends in high school, if you came into the trainer's room and one of your arms had been ripped off in football practice or something like that, the trainer would say the same thing. Ice it, tape it, see me in the morning. So, you know, for Georgi Mihailovic to say, ice it, tape it, see me in the morning was just was admirable and really great, even if he was, you know, doing it on one good drumstick. So, you know, like those are important decisions to make for players. I hope the coaches don't pressure players to push past their pain thresholds and their limits. But, you know, from where I stood, it looked like Mihailovic was playing just fine. And he made that choice, and it was a good call for him. You know, these Rapids, what they do in the offseason and what they rebuild for next year is anyone's guess. And I think a lot of the players who are on multi-year contracts will be back next year. I'm sure a few will not. They usually deal in the offseason a little bit, and we'll see how it comes down. But I thought a lot of these guys comported themselves admirably and did a really good job, you know, coming back. I mean, this was a weird game where, you know, if you just look at the score line and you see 4-1, you say to yourself, oh, they got run off the pitch. But the reality was the Galaxy kind of had the upper hand throughout the game, but LA, but Colorado hung with them the whole time. And yeah, that was great. And they, you know, I honestly thought throughout the game, we are not the better team, mm-hmm. but we're making a good show of it anyways. So I enjoyed that.
So to that point, Mark, again, you know, it was a bit of a lucky goal mistake by Stefan on the first one. Second one goes off the post as well. Mark, do you want to guess at 90 minutes and 1 second, so prior to the two Ricky Pooch goals in stoppage time, do you want to guess what the XG battle was for the two teams?
Wow, the fact that you know that is impressive. I would guess like 1.7 for each team. That'd be my guess.
No, so the entire LA, according to FotMob, again, we're FotMob truthers. We're not using the MLSsoccer.com algorithm. Our friends at Opta, or at least our friends at American Soccer Analysis, have argued this, Mark. I agree with them. For the entirety of the game, LA Galaxy had an XG of 1.73. The two goals.
That was so close.
Yeah.
But that was after those two goals.
Yes.
By Pooch. No way.
So the two Ricky Pooch goals were, I don't remember, I don't have written down which one is which, but it was 0.77 and then 0.36. So at 90 minutes and 1 second, LA Galaxy had 0.6 XG, Colorado had 0.44. Virtually a tie here, listeners. Functionally, from an XG standpoint, it should have been 0-0, maybe 1-0 in favor of the LA Galaxy at the 90th minute. So to your point, Mark, here, the Rapids were hanging in. They were in this game, even though from the run of play, goal scored, fortuitous, all that other stuff and everything, actual chance creation, trying to break down the opposing defense, that LA Galaxy were the better team. And that's okay. Again, Painsil should probably be playing in a top 10 league in Europe. Ricky Pooch, if not Barcelona, Mark, what, a mid-table, you know, Osasuna, would he be a starter for them? I think absolutely. He'd probably be the best player on their team as well. Gabriel Peck is probably going to get sold, if not this coming winter, in a year or 2 years, for he could be 15 to 20 million if he keeps up the numbers that they have. And the Rapids have Georgi Mihailovic and Rafael Navajo, who are wonderful, but who are not making moves like that in that particular situation. I do want to talk on two more big picture things as well, Mark. You said some nice things about Georgi Mihailovic, but I did see some scuttlebutt with the way that the team handled this being the final home game at Dick's and seeing off the fans and thanking them for what they had done all season, and Georgi Mihailovic not participating in that. So I do just want to point out that Georgi, in his opening statement to media in the post-game media availability in the scrum, did issue an apology. Quote, I'm summarizing or taking out some stuff here, listeners. So, but these are exact quotes, but there's other fluff in here that Georgi says. Quote, I want to apologize to the fans. They supported us all year. They deserve more the last two games. For me, it's tough. to show like that at home. And I think George is referring to his performance, the injury, and then also his own reaction or emotional feelings off the ball and after the game. It's not acceptable. And then I posted that on Burgundy Wave as a quote retweet of a Rapids fan who took a picture of Georgie walking towards the north side of the goal all by himself and presumably relatively quickly while the rest of the team, for the most part, went over and saluted the south stands, the supporters group, the fans who had stayed through that as well. So I just want to acknowledge that Georgie is a human being and he makes mistakes, and how he expresses himself as appreciating of the fan base might not be the most direct way or the easiest way for fans to observe. And I think he had a human moment where he realized maybe what he could have done differently in his first availability to say so to the fan base. Mark, I do think there's a good question of what this means lessons wise and ceiling wise for the team. Because, you know, as we've mentioned, this is still, you know, the Rapids have to find ways of winning playoff games against teams that are better than them on paper, where the best player on the field is on the other team. And to this date, that is not something in the Rapids way era of the club they have done a particularly good job of come the playoffs. Obviously, they were one and done in the playoffs, both in 2020 and in 2021. And there were times in this series where it did not look close at all. Again, the Rapids were injured, but, you know, I do think it bears wondering, Mark. I am still waiting for data that suggests that a team in the bottom quartile of net spend in MLS can reasonably win MLS Cup. Philadelphia Union got really close. Montreal's done a good job of making the playoffs. The Rapids have done good in those moments as well. But as we see it, Mark, like, you know, it's going to be probably Inter Miami and then probably one of the two LA teams that are getting in. And the Rapids aren't spending to that level to be competitive in that way. There's an argument, listeners, that the last true budget team, the last true lower seeded, get hot at the right time and then actually do something in the playoffs, not being a superiorly more talented, more expensive team to win MLS Cup, was these 2010 Colorado Rapids. And so I think it bears question of whether or not that's something that's possible or what that looks like. Ollie the Rods and Georgie Mihailovic both reflected post game about the skid towards the end of the season. And, you know, was that complacency? Was that fatigue? They qualified for the playoffs on that win against Toronto, and then they lost four straight in the regular season to close out the regular season. And then they lost another two for a 6-game losing streak to end their year. Why did that happen? Was it just fatigue? Was there something else they could have done differently? Was it a mentality thing? Both of them argued, Mark, and I think Chris Armas would probably agree, they did a lot of stuff to improve on that. Certainly this performance on Friday was not the worst of those 6 games that they lost to see out the season, but it's a good question and one that I think they'll be ruminating on. And hopefully, as Bassett is referred to, as other players, as other people at the club have referred to, this is a step in the right direction and a learning opportunity for the Colorado Rapids to be better for it going into next year. Mark, anything else that we want to say about this game, or shall we move on to bigger picture Rapids things?
Yeah, let's go on.
Okay, Mark, let's look back big picture on the 2024 Colorado Rapids. As I mentioned, we've separated it into 5 parts. Mark, if I'm remembering correctly, is it Shakespearean plays, I believe, are 5 parts, even though it's 3 acts normally. There's like 3 parts in the storytelling. Anyways, listeners, part one, the start of the season, and I remember it being a very big deal when the schedule came out that we looked at those first 7 games and thought it was going to be very, very difficult. At Portland Timbers with Evander, playing Nashville, Real Salt Lake, first game of the Rocky Mountain Cup, 3rd game in, Seattle Sounders, Houston Dynamo, LAFC, and then Inter Miami. And then I'm throwing in as well, listeners, the games against San Jose Earthquakes on April 13th, and then FC Dallas on April 20th, and then 2 really tough Eastern Conference opponents, both on the road, FC Cincinnati and then NYCFC as well, closing out on May 5th. Those were the first 11 games of the season, Mark, and we saw some mixed performances. We saw very clearly this was a new team under a new coaching staff. Georgie Mihailovic was frustrated. They were having a hard time at times getting the ball to Rafael Navajo. This also included the injury to Connor Ronan, which then had the Rapids have to adjust and move Cole Bassett deeper into the midfield. That then created a wonderful surprise in terms of the Rapids tactics this year with the double pivot with Ollie Larraz, sometimes Connor Ronan, alongside Cole Bassett, and Bassett flourishing into this box-to-box, double pivoty, deep-lying playmaker, crashing-the-box kind of player. And eventually, towards the end of this run, Mark, if we're including that spectacular 3-2 victory over LAFC on March 30th, we also started to see in this run Georgi Mihailovic come into his own, really click, understand his role, what he's doing as an individual, and then also starting to help other players as well. So this would have started the run of Rafael Navajo scoring many goals as well. So in this run, Mark, the Colorado Rapids went 5-3-3. Rabbi, what do you remember about the start of it? And do you think maybe in hindsight, you and or I could have been a little bit more patient given how worried we were with some of these performances that the Rapids had early on in the season?
I think we calibrated it right, and I think the only regret that I have, and I don't even know if it's a regret, is to do things like defend certain players while attacking other players without knowing all the evidence. But that's really common because that's what we're paid to do. That's what we get the big bucks for, Matt, to make reflections. So like I kept saying kind of early on, like, let's wait to cast judgment on Sam Vines until he settled in with the team. Or I think I was tough on Georgi Mihailovic at the beginning of the season and Zach Steff at the beginning of the season. Georgi came good. Zach, it's kind of like a hard call as to what he is and whether he's the guy. It really depends on what numbers you use, whether you apply them to the entire season or not. I think the most lightning rod player on the team about whether he was effective or not overall for the season is Zach Steffen. But like being concerned that the team didn't really have it all together at the beginning was a totally legitimate thing to say. There were certain decisions that I think both of us really liked in Chris Armas. I mean, I think two of the early ones, thinking back to the beginning of the podcast, like opening day, Ollie LaRaz was a starter and Moise Bombito was a starter. And those were decisions that Robin Fraser was not willing to make last year. And I think to both our credit and to, more importantly, to Chris Armas's credit, we were both thrilled with that. And so even though the results weren't necessarily immediately there on the score sheet, there were some immediate decisions that Chris Armas was making that we really liked. Another thing was we expected a fair bit of Red Bull style high press. And I think the other thing we kind of knew was they weren't going to understand how to high press in the Chris Armas style until they had tried it for a couple weeks. And I think that we were vindicated in that answer. So I think the early season was a period of adjustment. And I think the Colorado Rapids handled it quite well. Chris Armas handled it quite well. A number of the players handled it quite well.
Mark, the second part that we have, I'm referring to as the rough stretch. This would have been the period between May 11th, and then that would have continued through to the start of the international break on June 1st of 2024. Mark, that May 11th game, you might remember, was the San Jose Earthquakes, the loss at home that was 2-3, in which Colorado, I think, had four goals that were ultimately called offside. That was absolutely ridiculous. Bit of a fortuitous 1-0 win against Vancouver, who were playing down a man at one point. The second leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup, that wild 5-3 game that, Mark, might be the greatest regular season MLS game that I have ever witnessed in person. That crazy 3-3-1 or 3-3 game also with Minnesota that would have had Jung Ben Sin score a brace in 33 minutes, and then Colorado losing, albeit kind of running out of gas with some injuries and fatigue as well, to Houston Dynamo by a score of 3-1, and then 2-1 to Vancouver for the international break. I remember Georgi Mihailovic struggling or having a lot of frustrations during this period as well, Mark. There were a couple of injuries. The team just wasn't playing well and was starting to figure things out. I would argue, Mark, this was the start of the period in which we started to see Zach Steffen on his own do a better job from a defensive leadership standpoint, from a possession standpoint, and him making shots, him stopping shots. And the defense on the whole just wasn't really helping him at this point. I would argue, Mark, this is the turning of the corner really for Moise Bombito as well, in terms of him being the master of the basics, to steal a Chris Armas saying, and he had to work through some of the mistakes that he made, especially in that second leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup. As we'll get to in a minute, that leads to him playing very, very well, getting opportunity in Copa America with Canada. And then we know what that meant for Moise in terms of his time with the Colorado Rapids. Frustrating period, Mark. The team not playing well, but also still doing some things well. Are you even going to remember this, Mark, given what happened in the months that followed?
That's interesting you say that. I mean, there were two things I wanted to say about the previous period, which was you skated right over the Colorado Rapids drawing Inter Miami in Miami with the amazing Matt Pollard present for the match, getting a personal interview with Lionel Messi.
I did not. And, he was not available.
Yeah, and then going out for beers with him and drinking mate in the morning at a Cuban restaurant, you know, like that. All of it was that was a wild, epic story, Matt, which I'm sure will make it into your memoir someday. But then just 1 week later, I got to go down to San Jose and watch the Colorado Rapids in person beat San Jose. So that first period of the season was a lot of fun. That second period that you mentioned, where the Rapids lost to Salt Lake, the Rapids drew Minnesota, they lost to Houston, they lost to Vancouver. It was a bumpy period. They kind of closed that out with a win over Austin. You know, what was that period? Why were they so, why were they scratching so much? Why was it so strange? I'll be darned if I know. I mean, I think some of that was adjusting to the roster, making some decisions. Some of that was both the that was really the period when Zach Steffen struggled. It was really the period when Sam Vine struggled. It was also a period when Chris Armas was trying to figure out who the two defensive midfielders were and how they played with each other. So it was a little bit Larraz. It was a little bit Bassett. It was a little bit Connor Ronan. I think it was right after. I think for a long stretch of that, it was when Connor Ronan was injured. So the team was kind of adjusting and figuring out how to play without him. So yeah, there were a lot of things going on there. One of the other things was throughout the season, for long stretches, except for a pronounced period when Kevin Cabral kind of finally figured it out and was a plus-plus player, the Rapids really struggled on the wings. They had not figured out what to do with their wings. And this was also, this period, I think, was also the period when Rafael Navajo still hadn't started scoring in bunches. He hadn't figured out who to combine with. He hadn't created a rapport with other players. So there was a lot going wrong all at once with this team. We will probably forget it. And that's a good thing, because in the long run, this was an aberration and not a trend.
Moving on, Mark, I should say, listeners, that stretch, which we're, you know, kind of lumping together, was a 6-game stretch in which the Colorado Rapids went 1-4-1. The start of the season, the 11 games, they were 5-3-3. That is wins, loss, draws, to be clear. And then part three would have been, I'm referring to as summer fun here, Mark. So this would have been a 9-game stretch from June 15th through the end of MLS play before the break for Leagues Cup. That would have been on June 20th. And so that was a 2-0 win at home over Austin, Georgie getting a hat trick at St. Louis. 4-1 win over Montreal as well. That was the 9-point week, Mark. You remember that? That might have been one of the most fun podcasts we've had all season. There was the 3-0 loss against LAFC. That was tough, but then Colorado bounces back. 2-1 victory on 4th of July over Sporting Kansas City. Ollie Larraz getting his first goal for the club. And then a blowout win over St. Louis on the following Sunday. Darren Yapi scoring in garbage time to win to see off that game as well. A tough 1-1 draw with New York Red Bulls, and maybe some catharsis, but also I'm at peace with this from Omer Fernandez and from Chris Armas, former Red Bulls people. Difficult 3-2 loss to the LA Galaxy, one of now four losses the 2024 Rapids had against LA, albeit with a lot of squad rotation. That was, Mark, of course, the game in which Kevin Cabral scored and then dislocated, had the elbow injury, had some medical actions off of that, and then missed up until the decision day. And then followed up, Mark, on July 20th, I would argue the win of the season, a 3-2 victory over Real Salt Lake to win the Rocky Mountain Cup. I've spoken with a number of people, Mark, in the last couple weeks with the nihilism or lack of optimism about the series with the LA Galaxy. And so many people, I've said this and I yet to have somebody who disagreed with me, Mark. I don't think there's any question once the Rapids clinched CONCA champions and had that run in Leagues Cup that this season was a success. There are a lot of Rapids fans who would argue, however, as soon as they won that game on July 20th, the 2024 Rapids season was a success no matter what came after. Mark, what will you remember about this stretch of the Rapids going 6-2-1 and winning the RMC?
Yeah, this is a great stretch for Colorado. They really had a great period in here. I think it was 6 wins.
Six wins, two losses, and one tie,
right? That's really remarkable. And I think the wins were over quality opponents. St. Louis had a rough season, but after a season where they were one of the best teams in the Western Conference last year, and this year they really kind of like regressed a little bit. Montreal was kind of a hot mess too, so those games we beat up on a lot of weak teams. You know, that's the other way to look at this, which is most of the teams that we beat except for Salt Lake didn't ultimately make the playoffs, but more importantly, this was where we determined that we were not one of the weaker teams in the league, that we were a quality team and that we could prove it. And so that was really, really great. We also proved in this period that we couldn't beat the teams from LA. So that was also notable and interesting to point out. But the other thing that was important to kind of point out here that was really enjoyable was that Colorado scores goals. That this is the coming to fruition of the Rapids way that Porrick Smith wrote about these yay verily 6 years earlier, or like 7 years earlier, which was we wanted to play high IQ, high octane on the front foot soccer. And we wanted to possess the ball and we wanted to go toe to toe against teams. I think there were long stretches of time in both the Anthony Hudson and even in the Robin Fraser eras where the approach the coaches and the approach the team made to opposition was we're not as good as you and our tactics are going to demonstrate that, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be some dump and chase. We're going to try and nick goals. We're going to try and press in the first 15 minutes, get nick a goal and then hold on for dear life. Or we're going to kind of play you to a stalemate into the late minutes and try and use altitude and our energy over your tired legs at altitude to get us a win. And I think this was the beginning of a period for Chris Armas and for this team. And I think this is very much a Cole Bassett, Georgi Mihailovic, Hafa Navajo kind of like quality and mentality aspect, which is basically to say, we're as good as any players in the league. We're as good as any team in the league. We will play our style. You will deal with us. And I think that's another thing that's really cool about the Chris Armas system, which was, I don't think it was as necessarily adaptive to opposition. It was basically, and I remember asking Armas this to some degree when I was in San Jose, which was, we have an identity as a team. We are going to play the way we play. You will deal with us. And I really love that. I mean, like, that's when you think of the great teams in any sport, in any league, when you think about, you know, how LeBron James played with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat in their best years, when you think about Kobe Bryant and Shaq with the Lakers, when you think about kind of the way the Dodgers won the World Series this year, they have an identity. They're going to impose it upon you. You will deal with it. And that is a winning mentality for sports that I think we saw a lot of in this third act of the five acts of the Colorado Rapids.
Should point out as well, Mark, that this was a period in which Georgi Mihailovic was unavailable to the Olympics, and I don't have in front of me, I think there was some overlap here also with Moise Bombito not being available. I think Moise was gone for, I guess, the start of this because he would have come back in stoppage time. He was a substitute for that game at LA Galaxy, and then Georgi obviously missed the LA Galaxy game and then the second leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup. So I agree with you, Mark, in that this was a period in which you had Hafa Navajo doing his thing, Georgi absolutely clicking, and then also Cole Bassett. But I think, to your point, this was where I think the system came to fruition that was maybe less reliant on individuals. It was more, what are the 11 on the field doing as a collective, and what are they all doing when everyone just does their job? Not necessarily a bunch of guys being mid or below average, and then two or three players carrying the team. And I will say, Mark, there's two canaries in the coal mine that kind of came from this. You pointed out the Rapids attack being something to really deal with. And if we look at the end of the regular season, albeit with the other parts, including that four-game losing streak to see it out, the Colorado Rapids finished 1, 2, 3, 4. They were fifth in the Western Conference in goals for. They had 61 goals for behind the two LA teams, Portland and RSL, four very, very good attacking teams, Mark, four teams that have more expensive strikers and number 10s, et cetera, as well. But the two kind of canaries in the coal mine for me from this period that I think ultimately were the downfall of the Rapids was that despite getting 61 goals this season, they also had 60 goals conceded. So they had a goal difference of just plus one. And if you compare that, Mark, that is the lowest of any of the nine teams that made the playoffs in the Western Conference this year. So this is a team that scores a lot of goals. This was also a team that conceded a lot of goals. And if you look at the games against the top opposition, those were the games in which they looked poor, or the games where they got absolutely shellacked as well. You know, the 3-0 against LAFC, 5-0 against LA Galaxy as well. You know, that was a concern. So the system, when it was going well, even if Georgie wasn't unavailable, even if Moise Mbeto wasn't unavailable, could absolutely dominate bad teams like Sporting Kansas City, like St. Louis, like Austin. But in the tougher games, like the games against the LAs, the third leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup against RSL, those performances were ones where the system wasn't a fine, well-tuned machine operating on, you know, on you know, in fifth gear. It was also games in which you had a lot of sixes and sevens throughout the squad performances, and two or three players that were absolutely spectacular. I remember, Mark, on the when we did the Megapod at the Meet the Team party the day after the Rocky Mountain Cup, I was there with Mitch from DNVR and Braden from the Denver Post, and we were pointing out, like, Connor Ronan wasn't particularly great. Andreas Maxu wasn't particularly great in that Rocky Mountain Cup game. You know, it was Sam Vines making probably his best play of the entire season. It was a couple really big saves from Zach Steffen, and it was Cole Bassett doing his thing in his role with Georgi Mihailovic unavailable. So the Rapids still had really good talent that individually could carry the team, and the system could also do well against less good teams in the Western Conference. With that, Mark, we move on to Leagues Cup, which would have been from the period of August 1st through August 25th. Seven games in total the Rapids played. That 4-0 loss against Portland Timbers to open up the group stage, a 4-3 win in penalties after going 1-1 with Leon to get out of the group, and then four straight results against Liga MX opposition, starting with Leon. Then there was the 3-2 over FC Juarez, the 2-1 over Toluca, and then 9-8 in penalty extra times with goalkeepers seeing it out after a 0-0 with Club America, in which the Rapids were very stout defensively. Then there was the 4-0 loss to LAFC in the semifinal, and Colorado finished that up with a 2-2 draw against Philadelphia, winning it 3-1 in penalties with Zach Steffen doing a better job than Andre Blake. Mark, 5 years from now, what are we going to remember about this League's Cup run?
It was bonkers. I mean, I hope they really do a good job of kind of like reflecting on it. I am a little worried that Leagues Cup won't exist in like 3 years and people will kind of like not understand what this Cuppity Cup run was, but it was really cool. You know, we struggled once again to beat Portland. Portland was our kryptonite this year. No one will ever understand that. We'll look back on this and still never understand why Portland was like this, because of course, Portland in the first round of the MLS playoffs would ultimately trip over a series of rakes against Vancouver and be really embarrassing. But nonetheless, the Rapids would then go out and beat Leon and beat Juarez and beat Toluca and beat Club America before ultimately falling short against LAFC in the semifinal, which is just amazing. It's just an amazing run. And a little bit they defied logic and expectation. They were not the better team against Club America, but they grinded it out. That was a fantastic game and so much fun to watch. You could argue they weren't the better team against Leon, and they got that win. And there were moments at which you could say they probably weren't that great against Toluca, but they scored when they needed to. They played well when they needed to, and it all came out okay. So the things that will be remembered also in this series were Hafa Navajo being absolutely on fire, fantastic, and Zach Steffen standing on his head over and over again in games to get it done. I think Andreas Maxo and Kellen Keegan Rosenberry also get some dap here. They both did a fantastic job on the defensive back line that we don't often call them out for. And I think that's all really kind of notable and memorable. It was a great run. It was probably the most magical period of the season for Rapids fans, and I really hope that most fans watched these games, went out to these games, were excited for it. I mean, I was you know, I was one game away from going to the final myself. Like traveling to that game, and I was so excited. Like I knew that I would be heading out to the final was going to be probably
at Columbus.
Philadelphia or Columbus. Those were the options. And I was like, oh, great. I can get to either of those without too much trouble. I can drive to both. So the Rapids let me down just barely. But how much of a letdown could it really be if you make it all the way to a semifinal and get beat up by LAFC, who are, you know, absolutely bonkers good again? It was a great, great part of the season. This is the part of the show that when you announced the format that we were going to be reviewing the season and so on, this is the part where I was like, woohoo, I get to be all happy for like 1 5-minute stretch in the evening. That's really good stuff.
I should point out, Mark, this was also the period that birthed maybe one of the best quotes, one of the best memes in our time covering the Colorado Rapids, of Georgi Mihailovic, you know, screaming exasperatedly up the effing pits, you know, as the camera was panning through on the field level. I think Chris Armas and maybe Zach Steffen were in the shot, and Georgi just comes in and absolutely memes it. We forgot to mention, Mark, during that first start of the season in which, you know, there was kind of mixed optimism and the Rapids ultimately, in hindsight, doing a really good job in those open 11 games, but that also included that 3-0 victory against San Jose Earthquakes back on April 13th, birthed the Matt Doyle meme of the Rapids, where he commented that San Jose Earthquakes had reached absolute rock bottom because they were losing 3-0 to, all caps, the Rapids. And in the same way, Mark, that we see recent, I think, you know, there's a lot of memes or plenty of examples in pop culture in which someone attempts to criticize or make a joke out of something that then the entity or the fans around that entity then spin that and use that as an absolute rallying cry. So years from now, Mark, I hope that there are still Rapids fans who are typing and saying, you know, UTFP, and then certainly saying the Rapids in all caps now has its own meaning in fandom and memedom from it as well. And those are two joys, I think, from this season. In the same way, Mark, you could argue keep fighting from 2016 also was a variable as well. And then 2021 with Danny Wilson and Jack Price with the Scottish Salmon as well. So both of those born out of two really good periods for the Rapids, one at the start of the season and then one culminating ultimately in making it to CONCA champions. Mark, let's now talk about the less fun part, which we are dubbing the collapse, which would have been after League's Cup. So going into the game against League's Cup would have started on August 31st. That was the crazy 3-2 victory over FC Dallas. Darren Yapi scoring in stoppage time in order to win that game out. A very cathartic win over Portland Timbers, Mark, in a 2-1 game that could have gone either way. But then you follow that up with the losing. There was the 4-1 to Sporting Kansas City, who ultimately did not make the playoffs. You had the 2-0 victory over a Toronto team whose season was done, and they rotated the squad to try and prioritize their I can't remember if it's the Amway Canadian Championship. I can't remember the Canadian Cup final they had marked the following week. Then there was the 3-0 to Minnesota, the 3-1 to Colorado Rapids, the 1-0 loss to Seattle, in which the performance was good, but mistake on the counter that ultimately led to the only goal. And then, of course, there was decision day against Austin, and then the aforementioned 5-0 and 4-1 to LA Galaxy to see that out. Mark, lack of energy at times, some injury, obviously, in this period, including, I guess that would have been the final six games that you did not have Cole Bassett available to the team. You had Georgi Mihailovic stretchered off on decision day against Austin, and he played on one leg, one and a half good ankles the other night against LA Galaxy, and just lesser energy, lesser bite in terms of what the Rapids were doing attacking-wise, not that much contribution from either the double pivot or the winger position as well, and really just the team gradually regressing to them being a sieve in terms of making it easy on the opponent, turning the ball over at midfield, and then them getting really high quality chances in transition.
It was so surprising. I mean, I remember we previewed the Sporting Kansas City game, Matt, after they beat Portland, and we were like, we finally beat Portland. Yay. We'll have no problem against Sporting Kansas City. They're a hot mess this year, and they can't even possess the ball, which is the only thing that Peter Vermes knows how to do. So what could go wrong? And then, oh no, it all went wrong. Like yes. that was basically what happened. That was the end. The wheels came off the bus. We beat a useless, totally discombobulated Toronto team. And then the rest of the season was a total catastrophe. I mean, they couldn't beat Minnesota. They didn't look like they showed up for that game at all. They couldn't beat LA Galaxy, who I don't think we expected them to beat. They couldn't beat Seattle, who haven't been very good this year. They haven't been very consistent, although they just made it through the playoffs tonight. So Seattle doing Seattle things, which is show up in the playoffs after kind of like grinding their way through the season and, you know, figuring it out. And then that decision day loss to Austin was like, what is going on? Who is this team? Why can't we do anything? And they didn't play well in that game at all. One way of slicing all this is to say the importance of Cole Bassett cannot be understated. He was the straw that stirs the drink. A lot of the MLS pundits all season long were talking about it. And I don't think they were wrong to do it because I think it was really important. I wrote several articles. I interviewed Cole this year. This was, for me, my year of Cole. I spent a lot of time talking to him and thinking about how he affected the team. But his the ability for a player to just run and just run and run and run and cover ground causes other teams total heartburn, like massive consternation. Like, they can't figure out how to deal with it. Cole Bassett is everywhere. He's on the ball. He passes the ball well. He pops up inside. He pops up outside. He makes runs that you have to track. He drops into space that you have to follow him into. He just created. It was like having a 12th player on the field because he was the Energizer Bunny. And without him in this fifth of five acts, the Rapids just didn't look good. And it stretched into the playoffs, obviously, because without Cole Bassett in the two games they played against the LA Galaxy, there were so many fewer things that they could do. Georgi Mihailovic does some of those things, but Georgi was more of like a Lionel Messi type player in that, not that he's on the ball undefendable, although he is tough to defend on the ball, but more like Bassett goes everywhere, pops up everywhere, runs like crazy and drives players nuts. Messi just conserves energy. Like he runs when he needs to run. And Georgi is like that too. But you need guys who are going to run through a brick wall if you're going to, like, conserve energy, right? Miami's biggest problem going into the MLS playoffs is Messi and Suarez only run when they need to. And that has some defensive liability problems, and it also has some, hey, who's going to, like, make the runs to force players to go in and defend if these both players are both going to be like, oh, I'm going to conserve my energy for a few more minutes. Like, so that's the Rapids without Cole Bassett. They don't have that aspect. And that was my take on the fifth period. The other one that, you know, that we both talked about for folks who are tuning into this podcast, having not listened in a couple weeks, is how would this end of season have been had we not sold Moise Bombito to OGC Nice in the French league? You know, he was a center back who had the speed of a left wing or the speed of a fullback. You could do things offensively and defensively because you knew Moise could make the run to get back in defense. Once you lose Moise, you lose the foot speed. Everything about your team changes. So this team lost two critical players down the stretch. They really didn't compensate well, and we're out of the playoffs.
I was going through Mark, and I was looking at the five different parts they have, and, you know, what am I going to remember? What's that going to look like? And you compare that to when we've done this review in years past, like, what stretch really sticks out? And the stretches that stick out for me, Mark, if I'm using 2019 as an example, was the, you know, two draws, 11 losses in the first 13 game stretch they had. And then it was basically all other good stuff there. I feel like, Mark, there's an opportunity here for functionally every single person, Rapids fan, person around the Rapids community, national pundit, to effectively have the same memory of this season, but their view on whether or not it was a success or it was a failure, or whether you're prioritizing the ineptitude in the playoffs or the Rocky Mountain Cup and Leagues Cup, to functionally say the same things, but in different orders. So you could say, Mark, let's go with the negative one, because obviously I'm a negative Nelly and hate Chris Armas and have this entire season, is that you could say that, okay, yes, they won the Rocky Mountain Cup. Yes, they had a very good regular season. Yes, they qualified for the CONCACAF Champions. Yes, Porrick Smith will probably talk about that thing like it's an actual trophy, just like he has the 2021 MLS Western Conference regular season title, or finishing first in the West in 2021, but they could not do it in the playoffs. And the optimistic view of this would be the Rapids fans saying, okay, yes, the end of the season was bad. Yes, the team didn't do anything in the playoffs, but Mark, only one MLS team is going to finish the playoffs on an actual win, right? Only one team is going to win is going to win MLS Cup. And so, yes, it's disappointing that the Rapids lose out. But, Mark, if LA Galaxy are in the final against Inter Miami, like, are we not – is that not going to color our perspective and give us a new perspective on how this season ended? If the Rapids end up losing to an MLS Cup finalist, an MLS Cup winner, a team that sells three players for $30-40 million in a couple of years between Pooj, Painstill, Peck, the Killer Peas, and everything, it's like, okay, yeah, that wasn't that bad. And yes, they didn't do anything in the playoffs, but they won the Rocky Mountain Cup, and they had a really good regular season, and they brought in a bunch of exciting players who are going to be here and part of the core for years, and they did something in Leagues Cup, which we weren't expecting, and it led to an opportunity in CONCACAF Champions. We're functionally saying the same thing, Mark. The order in which you say it, I think, ultimately determines whether or not you look at this from an optimistic perspective or you want to be a hater. I do think, Mark, however, a lot of this season will be colored by what then the Rapids do off of that. So as we said earlier, you know, is this going to be just like with 2016 and just like with 2021, where the Rapids have one good season and then are kind of mid and then kind of regress and then have to restart again? Is this a rebirth of this football club? Is this a renaissance of the Colorado Rapids? Or is this just, are they breaking the wheel of their cycle, Mark? Or is this just the continuation of what they've largely been in the entire time you and I have been around the club? And we don't know the answer to that, listeners. And Mark and I aren't going to speculate on what it's going to be. And we're probably not going to know that answer for two seasons, maybe three as well. That being said, Mark, let's look ahead to what this means from a season standpoint. Rabbi, I think you and I have both said it now. A D-mid, a winger, a center back. Are those your three top priorities for the shopping list for Chris Armas this winter? And Mark, what are you prioritizing? Give me a ranking between those three positions for you.
You said a D-mid, a winger,
and a center back.
Huh. That's interesting. For me, it's that's really interesting. I guess it's winger, midfielder, fullback, D-mid. That's where I'm at. I actually think that this team, despite the fact that they went out and they got Reggie Cannon, despite the fact that we have Sam Vines and Keegan Rosenberry and Sebastian, what's Sebastian's last name?
Anderson.
Sebastian Anderson. I think right now that one or two of those guys needs to move on, and the team needs to go get a guy who is a lockdown player at one of those positions. I think that Reggie Cannon has probably got to have some competition at right back, or the Rapids need to consider going out and getting a new left back. I hate saying that because I really like the guys that are there, but I'm not sure that long-term they're the solution. For winger, I've been saying it for years, which is, Kevin Cabral was an okay stopgap measure. We got him on a bargain price, but he never really solved the problem. Calvin Harris is a solid player, but not spectacular, and I don't think he's going to grow into the position. Johnny Lewis has been good, but not great. Omir Fernandez has been good, but not great. If this team wants to take a step forward, they need a Gabriel Peck or a Joseph Painsel level kind of striker winger forward type guy, like a guy who really is, you know, an absolute goal scorer or an assist machine, or somebody who's going to come out and do really, really good things. So that's the most important position for me.
I think it's an interesting question, Mark, because I think there's an argument that neither of those three positions is like a huge, like massive hole where the Rapids don't have any options. And I think it's also a valid question of, is the long-term answer each of these positions already on the roster? We saw a lot of good stuff from Mike Edwards in some of the moments that he had where he had opportunities to start. Is he a viable starter? Mark, I think we can agree. We love Lal Subhabhankar, amazing salt of the earth human being. Like, this is his ceiling, and it's slightly above average MLS center back, and a center back who's still very capable of making mistakes and being an average to below average center back. I don't know that the Rapids are getting a result on the road in a must-win playoff game if Lal Subhabhankar is one of your two starting center backs. So is Mike Edwards the answer there? Can, now that the Rapids will have a full offseason and think about what they want to do shape and midfield-wise, do the puzzle pieces that were forced into working between Bassett, Ronan, and Oliver Larraz? Can they actually fit in more naturally? Is there something they can do differently there? Is the 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1 that Armis experimented with and kind of worked against the LA Galaxy with them trying it the first time, Mark, is that a alternative view for them? I think we've seen MLS teams that do really well or have really, really good tactical managers. They have two or three things that they try to do very well. I would argue if you're looking at a Wilfred Nancy, Tata Martino, more so with Atlanta than with Miami recently, that they're also doing that in two different but very, very similar shapes as well. For the most part, the Rapids have done the same two or three things that they've tried to do all season, but in the 4-2-3-1, basically from those first 10 games. Is the 3-4-3 the appropriate change up or off-speed pitch that the Rapids can use now that we already know they have a really, really good fastball in the 4-2-3-1 with Bassett in the double pivot? I don't know the answer to that question. I'd love a D-mid. Would have been nice to have Lamine Diok be the answer to that, Mark. Rabbi, this will not happen. I am not predicting that this is going to happen as well. Could you imagine the 2021 version of Kellen Acosta, Mark, in this midfield alongside Bassett? I feel like that would solve a lot of the problems. That's just me spitballing. And then on the winger position, I'm not sure Jonathan Lewis is on this roster next year, Mark. And does that mean Kamani Stewart-Baines is the answer? Calvin Harris had
I just want to say I've been saying that for like 3 years. So the idea, yes. I've lost hope of the idea that Johnny Lewis will move on to another team. That's not to say that I dislike Johnny Lewis. I think he's a fine player. I've been always hashtag free Johnny Lewis because I think he could do other things at like League One in England or something like that. Back to you, Matt. Sorry.
Yes, the reported departure of Jonathan Lewis once again is being exaggerated and is possibly not remotely on the table. But so Calvin Harris had unquestionably his best season as a professional, Mark, and we've seen him in every single year he's been with the Rapids. He takes steps forward. Can he go from being a decent to above average winger to now being an effective, like, big game winger, for example? And we still like Kevin Cabral, Mark. I think if he wasn't carrying a DP tag and he wasn't making $1 million, at least from a Rapids compensation standpoint, I don't think we wouldn't be as mad about him. If he was making 700K and was a max budget player, Mark, while on the Rapids and was a foreign player who had a path to getting his green card and becoming a domestic player, I think our frame of reference for Kevin Cabral would be very, very different on this team as well. So Kamani Stewart-Baines also on the roster. So there are options at these three positions of need for the Rapids. We'll see how they ultimately end up filling it. Porik Smith still really likes the MLS Super Draft. We could see the Rapids move up to try and get a Generation Adidas or one of the top seniors in one of those three positions. They have the open U22 slot that Diok was on. They have an open international roster slot. Mark, correct me if I'm wrong with your spreadsheet, and that might change significantly in the next couple weeks with the roster decisions that the Rapids have. But the Rapids have roster flexibility based on the MLS roster rules. We want to believe that they will now have financial flexibility with the Moise Bombito money and now the players who they've departed on now being completely off the books. Sydney Tavares, Danny Wilson, Alex Gershbach, Sam Nicholson. And we'll see whether or not they end up filling that and what that looks like. But the Rapids cannot be complacent in this winter, listeners. They have to be as aggressive as they were in the past winter. They need to build out depth. They need to fill those three positions or have someone step up into that role. Teams that do well in a regular season, then get into Champions League, then don't have depth, that then are pay the price when it comes to Champions League. And that Champions League failure can then also set you behind the eight ball in terms of what you're trying to do in the MLS regular season. If the Rapids are as aggressive as they are in the winter, then I think they make 2 to 3 signings in those positions of need. They filled out some depth through the draft, maybe a homegrown. Not sure that there's an obvious position or an obvious player who takes that position based on the young talent that they have coming up available to them. And if they do that, I think they can be a really, really hard out for a Mexican team in CONCACAF Champions. And they could still be a really, really good regular season team and a team that could be working towards doing something come October, November in the MLS Cup playoffs. Mark, let us briefly go through. Listeners, I have it on very good authority. The Rapids will not be very, very quick in their offseason moves that they have. They've got a couple weeks, Mark. I think it's everybody who doesn't make the semifinals has to let's look this up, actually. So, Mark, the deadline for MLS teams who do not make MLS Cup, which the Rapids are, for their end-of-season roster moves is Wednesday, November 27th. So we're here talking on the 3rd, Mark. So the Rapids have, what, 24 days, almost three and a half weeks in order for them to decide what they're doing options-wise. The club, listeners, historically is on the later end on that front. Rabbi, you and I remember several years in which the Rapids did not release their end of roster decisions by that deadline, but then released it the day after. They had done it. It was all on time and everything, but they specifically wanted to release that information knowing what everyone else was doing, but also not make that information available to anyone else who was making a last minute decision. Of course, Mark, Rapids Twitter then decided to question whether or not the Rapids actually exercised those options or just failed to file the paperwork. So I would expect, listeners, the Rapids will be on the late end of that front as well. Do not expect any news this week. Mark, we're not podcasting in the next week if there's no roster news, right? Okay.
There's no reason to, no.
Okay, so Rabbi, let's just go through really quickly, just really gut reaction, not a lot of details, not a lot of thinking about it. The only out-of-contract player for the Rapids who I believe is eligible free agency is Jonathan Lewis. We just said it, Mark, in 2025, is Jonathan Lewis a member of the Colorado Rapids?
Nope.
I say no. There are team options on the following players, Mark. Let's just do yes, no. Lawless Abubakar.
Nope.
I think Lawless is back. I think he's on a renegotiated lower deal. It will not be on his team option for 2025. Remy Cabral, Mark, who is mostly on loan in the USL.
Yep. He's coming back because he's young and cheap.
I say yes as well. Calvin Harris. Yes.
Yep, because he's young and cheap.
Miguel Navarro, Mark, who is still on loan. I think he's the one at Talleres, and they do have an option to buy.
Nope.
I say Talleres picks up the option on him. Captain Keegan Rosenberry.
Yep.
Yes. Sebastian Anderson.
Nope. I think they've seen everything they can out of him, and even though he's young and cheap, there's always other young and cheap players around.
I will say no as well, Mark. I think it's free Sebastian Anderson. Let him go to another MLS team that is going to give him an opportunity to actually play, or let him play a full season in the championship against grown old men.
That's what I think.
Michael Edwards.
He's coming back. They like him.
I say yes. Nate Jones, who is mostly on loan starting for Rapids 2, Mark.
Nope. If you can't break through that first year and get any time, you're never going to break through.
I say yes, he is a young player, and another year under Eric Boucher would probably do him really, really good for his development. I think they bank on that, and they pick up his option. Don't think that he's a major factor for the first team in 2025. And Ollie LaRaz, I say yes.
Yeah, Ollie's coming back. I mean, he scored the first goal in the playoffs for the Colorado Rapids in 8 years because the Rapids didn't score in 2021 or 2020. So.
Okay.
Legend.
Mark, anything else or shall we get out of here?
I'm ready for bed, man.
Okay. Listen, thank you so much for listening to Holding the High Line all year, fans. It's been so fun to be a platform and a voice for you and to do this kind of work. And that happens because we have a really engaged, really interested fan base. Listening to a podcast about your team when they are sucking is not fun. Watching a losing team isn't fun. Consuming content about that team when the season ends, when it's disappointing, when it ends on a 6-game losing streak is not fun. You are the heartbeat of this club. You make this fun. You make this enjoyable for us here at Holding the High Line. So I just wanted to thank, you know, every single person who's even listened to 10 seconds of us in one episode this entire year. I just want to say thank you for doing that. We have a wonderful audience, and we look forward to continuing that as we go into season 8 of Holding the High Line in 2025. Listeners, follow us individually on Twitter, on X, at @soccer_rabbi, at LWS Matt Pollard, and at Rapids96podcast. Email us, long form, at Rapids96podcast@gmail.com. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHGHL. Check out our Substack at holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can find Mark's written work. That's where you can find our merch. That's where you can support us financially as well. My written work on the Rapids is mostly still at burgundywave.com. Rate, review, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And tell your favorite Colorado Rapids player who's just coming off of an injury and maybe feeling responsible about us so that they can get a cathartic moment where we say nice things about them and affirm them that we are not mad that they got injured and that sometimes bad things happen to the human body when you get hurt. Mark, I'll say we will podcast listeners when there is roster news, whenever that is. That will be hopefully before the end of the calendar year. Certainly, Mark, who you got what's the MLS Cup matchup for you, and who wins MLS Cup?
Ooh, so weird. God. Well, Inter Miami is going to make it through. I think the Galaxy top LAFC this year, and I think it's going to be Inter Miami winning the whole thing. What about you, Matt?
I have the exact same thing, honestly, Mark. I think I think it's El Tráfico in the conference final. I think LA Galaxy barely get it done in a really hostile environment. I think with Columbus Crew out, and I can't remember, I think Charlotte's going to a third game as well, Mark. I think most of the real threats for Inter Miami, the giant killers there, I think that's paved the path for Messi and everybody to get to MLS Cup. I think they get to MLS Cup. They host it. Absolute bonkers environment against the LA Galaxy at Chase Stadium. I think it's a close competitive game. Lionel Messi's the best player in the world. He does something really, really great. That then leads to Inter Miami lifting MLS Cup in 2024. Listeners, we will see you when there's offseason news. We are not going away. Mark and I've got a bunch of other stuff working on. There's some evergreen content, some interviews from people at the club that we want to have. That's going to be some offseason stuff. And Mark, I'm finally going to have time now that the Rapids are done playing games for us to actually finish Memories from Toronto. So at some point that Paul Bravo episode is going to be out, listeners, and you will hear all of those interviews. Those will probably come out on Sundays, and I blood packed here, Rapids fans, that all of that content will be released to you before the season opener in 2025. So you can actually finally enjoy all those interviews that we did during 2020 for the 10th anniversary of the club. We'll be done by the time we get to the 15th anniversary of MLS Cup 2010. Listeners, thank you so much for listening to season 7 of Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We'll see you sometime soon.
I just want to reiterate Matt's thanks to everyone for listening to us, and all those out there in Rapids land for keeping faith with this club. We're not the most glamorous. We're not the most glorious. We're not the richest. We're not the fanciest. We don't have the best nachos in the league, but we are a heck of a lot of fun if you want to come out to a match. And we appreciate our listeners, who are cerebral, intellectual folks who like learning about soccer, thinking about soccer, and arguing with us who pretend like we know more about soccer than everyone else. We do not know more. We know a lot. We like to hear from our fans and from our supporters and listeners, because they know a lot too, and we appreciate you. So thank you very much. Going into the off season, let's recharge it up, and one last time, peace.